For another 4 centuries, the great pile lay undisturbed on the desert's edge, its outer casing virtually intact. An Arab historian who saw the pyramid in the early 13th century compared it. Well, he was erotic, so I'll skip that. Subsequently, a series of earthquakes demolished large parts of northern Egypt, and descendants of Al-Mamun's workers wreaked their revenge on the treasureless pyramid because it became the folly of Al-Mamun's men. I mean, they found nothing but an empty box. So they wreaked their vengeance by stripping it of its precious limestone casing to rebuild their new capital city, El Kahira, translated the Victorious. In the course of several generations, they managed to remove the entire 22 acres of 100-inch thick covering of the pyramid, and even built 2 bridges, especially to drag the heavier stones across the river on camel trains to Cairo for the construction of a series of mosques and palaces. And here's pictures of the mosque of Sultan Hassan in Cairo, built in 1356 with limestone blocks removed from the covering of the Great Pyramid. So what you see now has the limestone covering that preserved it so tightly fitted that even the door of entrance could not be seen. The stripping of the limestone left the core masonry exposed, and around the stripped pyramid, fragments of limestone and rubble piled. Nobody cared now to re-enter the pyramid. Superstition haunted the ancient structure. It was said to be haunted by ghosts. Look, I saw the first movies of the opening of King Tut's tomb and all the superstitions. This one's much worse. Suspicion shrouded the ancient structure. It was said to be haunted by ghosts and to be alive with venomous vermin. According to the Arabs, the Great Pyramid was haunted at noon and sunset by a naked woman with large teeth who seduced people into her power and then drove them insane. When Rabbi Benjamin ben Jonah of Navarre, an adventurous 12th century traveler, reached the Giza plateau from Abyssinia, he noted that the pyramids which are seen here are constructed by witchcraft. Abu al-Latif, who taught medicine as well as history in Baghdad, summoned the courage to enter the Great Pyramid shortly after Benjamin's visit, but admitted that within its stifling interior he fainted from fear and came out more dead than alive. The pyramid's bad reputation spread so far afield that when the fabulous English explorer Sir John Mandeville is supposed to have visited Egypt in the 14th century, he is said to have complained he dared not enter the pyramid because it was filled with serpents. We'll enter it. I'm making you eager to go. Not until the Renaissance did a rational approach to entering the pyramid come alive. In 1638, John Greaves, a 36-year-old mathematician and astronomer who had studied at Oxford and taught geometry in London, decided to set off for Egypt. His was no idle curiosity. Like Al-Mamun, he hoped to find in the Great Pyramid a datum that might help to establish the dimensions of the planet. Are you aware of the fact that when Columbus discovered America, they thought the earth was flat? These people knew better. Centuries earlier. Although the preceding century, this is 1638, had spawned the great voyages of exploration and Magellan's crew had circumnavigated the earth, the sciences of geography and astronomy were still so much in their infancy that no one had improved on Ptolemy's or Al-Mamun's geographical degree, and hence no one knew the true circumference of the earth. The pyramid revealed it. Greaves applied for patronage. Got assistance from the magistrates of the city of London. Though a bookish mathematician, he was not without courage as an explorer. At the pyramid, I'm about to the point I'm going to quit, so relax. At the pyramid, he climbed into the mound, or onto the mound of the rubbish 38 feet high which surrounded it, and gingerly led himself into the descending passage. Now, the Arabs were a group. This mathematician, by himself. Gingerly led himself into the descending passage, creeping like a serpent, horrified to find himself in a storm of bats. I saw Lucille go like that. In a storm of bats, quote, by him, so ugly and so large, exceeding a foot in length. The second night we land, we go down there. To scare off the bats and clear the air, Greaves resorted to firing his pistols. The explosions reverberating like cannon shots in the restricted passage of the pyramid. How you doing, Lucille? Working his way downward, he's alone. Greaves reached the point where Al Mamun's original tunnel joined the descending passage, but was unable to proceed in a downward direction because of the debris left behind by Al Mamun's men. I mean, in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, at least that hero had a blowtorch and a pretty woman with a high heel shoe he could use and a whip. Following in the Arab's footsteps, Greaves climbed around the massive granite plugs and up into the low ascending passage. Having scrambled to the top, Greaves retraced Al Mamun's course along the short horizontal passage to the Queen's Chamber, where he found the stench of vermin so offensive he couldn't linger. Everything Greaves came across was a puzzle to him. The steepness of the grand gallery seemed to preclude its having been designed as a chamber. The difficulty of scaling its polished slope made it impractical as a stairway. Also, it was accessible only through the preceding very low passage. He admitted, nevertheless, that the pyramid was a very stately work, not inferior either in respect or richness of materials to the most sumptuous and magnificent building. Sounds like a low-key Englishman describing it. He noted it was built of polished limestone, very evenly cut, in spacious squares or tables. And he found that the knitting of the joints was so close it wasn't even discernible to the naked eye. Now, we're this far, if you want a picture of it. We're inside this monstrous pyramid. Now, they bored through, and then they discovered the passageway that goes down. And this pit down here, we're leaving out for the moment. They peered down in there. Then they go up this ascending passage. Then they take the side road over here to the Queen's Chamber. And they go back and up that funny stared thing, and they come out to the King's Chamber here, as they called it, with the empty sarcophagus in it. Now, what's the meaning of all this? And they're not done yet. Making his way to the King's Chamber, Greaves was puzzled that so incredibly imposing a structure as the pyramid should be built around a single chamber with a single empty coffer. Does that puzzle you or not? Am I the only guy interested in this? I'm going to do it anyway because I'm interested. Anybody want to leave? You go to sleep, I'll commit you forever to the interior of the pyramid. Making his way to the King's Chamber, he was puzzled. He could see no reason for its entrance or the complexity of its antechamber. Now, the Freemasons for years have claimed it was a secret pattern through which the initiates went in their degrees of mystic learning as they learned their witchcraft and the secret of the initiates. Alexander the Great was never the same after his exposure. No event in his life shook Napoleon like his time alone in that room with the sarcophagus. Being a scientist by nature, Greaves set to collecting and noting data about the building. Picking his way to the foot of the Grand Gallery, Greaves made a new and startling discovery. Right here. They missed it when the Arabs went through. Right there as you enter toward over to the Queen's Chamber. I wouldn't do this if it didn't have the meaning I'm heading for. Picking his way to the foot of the Grand Gallery, Greaves made a new and startling discovery. I got some people who want to listen to other things. They're so mad because I can't get to the point. They're just gnashing their teeth. Good. I'm going to catch you when you change the channel and tell them the secret. Picking his way back to the foot of the Grand Gallery, Greaves made a new and startling discovery. From the ramp at one side, a stone block had been forcibly removed. And a passage appeared to have been dug straight down into the bowels of the pyramid. The aperture was a little over 3 feet wide. Now this guy's in this monstrous thing alone. Nobody's been in there for years. The aperture was a little over 3 feet wide, but his notches had been carved opposite one another on the sides of the well. Greaves lowered himself into it and descended about 60 feet. I get the jeebie-jeebies. To where the shaft had been enlarged into a small chamber or grotto. Below him, the shaft continued into the murky darkness, but the air was so foul and the bats so thick that Greaves decided to climb back up the way he had entered. Puzzled by this strange feature of the pyramid. That's the way it looks. Right here. That's what he went down into. He found the grotto down there. Lowering himself by holding on to the sides. Like a mountain climber, you know, working his way. With bats. Foot wide, foot long. Bats. That the well shaft was not bottomless, he established by dropping a lighted flare, which continued to flicker from its depths. It had a bottom. Outside, he climbed to the top of the pyramid. I would, too, give breath fresh air. Now, here's another diagram of what they had discovered. They had broken through from the outside here, come down the aperture, and then back up again here. The Queen's Chamber. Here's that strange passageway that goes into the King's Chamber here. This hadn't yet come out. King's Chamber here. And here's this descending passageway that he let himself in. Well, when Greaves got done, he wrote a lot of stuff. Then the biggies got involved. None other than Sir Isaac Newton. He wrote a dissertation upon the sacred cubit of the Jews and the cubits of several nations. The discovery in, quote, modern times of a distinction between the sacred or royal cubit method of measurement and the ordinary cubit. Now, Plato, the greatest philosopher, had a sign over his door that said, no geometry or don't enter here. We take for granted measurement. Today we carry our little computers around, don't even have to think. This longer sacred cubit Newton had derived from the Jewish historian Josephus' description of the circumference of the pillars of the temple at Jerusalem. Newton wrote it up, and he was preoccupied with establishing the cubit of the ancient Egyptians with no idle curiosity. They continued to go into the problems that had come about from these people, from Greaves' mathematical and scientific discoveries, but it wasn't until and they just debated and talked about the measurements and fought and came up with theories. It wasn't until the time of the American Revolution Was any further discovery of importance made at the pyramid? In 1765, Nathaniel Davison, who was later British Consul General in Algeria, was able to spend a vacation in Egypt and carefully explore the pyramid. More intrepid than Greaves, Davison lowered a lamp into the well, that place where he went down, tied a rope round his waist, and had himself carefully lowered into its ominous darkness, about 100 feet further down than Greaves went, only to find the bottom blocked with sand and rubbish. To Davison, it appeared strange that anyone should go to such an enormous amount of effort to dig a shaft almost 200 feet into the heart of the pyramid and simply come to a dead end. But there was nothing more he could do. It was extremely close and filthy at the bottom of the well, and his candle soon burned up what little air was available. Also, an immense number of huge bats made it difficult for Davison to keep his candle alight. So he laboriously made his way back to the surface. Abandoning this quest, Davison set about finding any other secret feature within the interior of the pyramid. And they've only scratched the surface, friends. I said, major government investments attempting to use modern instrumentation to find cavities within the pyramid were so happy with the research data they fed into the computer until it would come out one time with the same data, one answer, and the next time with a different answer. Scientifically impossible, they're still bamboozled about it. At the top of the Grand Gallery, you know, the Grand Gallery is where the King's Chamber is, where the empty sarcophagus, the same shape as the Ark of the Covenant is. Davison set about finding any other secret features within the interior of the pyramid. At the top of the Grand Gallery, he noted that his voice was answered in a curious way by repeated echoes which appeared to resonate from somewhere above him. Placing a candle at the end of two long canes, Davison was able to spot a small rectangular hole about 2 feet wide, this time, at the very top of the Grand Gallery, where its wall joined the ceiling. To reach this hole was a precarious ordeal. Do you realize how many centuries the time capsule planner had kept the secrets? The walls of the gallery were polished and slippery. The perch upon which he had to place his ladder was extremely small and stood high above a yawning drop of 150 feet. Nevertheless, Davison managed to raise 7 short ladders till the topmost reached the small rectangular hole. Here's a picture of him doing it. Ladders tied together with ladders that they had brought through that little... I mean, you don't really think. They didn't have modern aluminum ladders that sort of telescope. Davison climbed this rickety ladder combination with difficulty. At the top, he found he was prevented from entering the 2-foot hole by some 16 inches of bat dung, which had accumulated through the centuries. Folks, they've cleaned it up. Don't get nervous. It's cleaned up now. Masking his face with a kerchief, Davison managed what people will do, managed to wedge himself into the stifling passage and crawl 25 feet to a chamber not high enough to stand in, but every bit as wide as the King's Chamber below it. Beneath the bat dung, Davison was able to make out a floor consisting of the tops of 9 rough-hewn monolithic granite slabs, each weighing up to 70 tons or as much as a modern railway engine. You know when this was built? The undersides of these slabs formed the ceiling of the King's Chamber. To Davison's amazement, the low flat ceiling of the chamber was also constructed of another similar row of granite monoliths. Here's the chamber named after him with a bunch of bats pictured that come out of the place. See his little narrow chamber? King's Chamber. And he had knocked the hole and gone up there and found this other little hole. These are the bats. They look delightful. I'm having a good time. Otherwise, Davison could find nothing of either historical or architectural interest. Listen close. No treasure. They didn't find it the first time. No treasure. No inscription. No gold. No jewels. His sole reward was to carve his graffito on the wall and have the newly discovered chamber named Davison's Chamber in his honor. When the American Revolution was followed by the French, Napoleon set out to spread his political doctrines of Freemasonry. Interest was rekindled in the pyramid. Napoleon went with about 175 intellectuals he took with his soldiers, scattered throughout the fleet. When they arrived at the Great Pyramid, they were attacked by 10,000 Mameluke horsemen. The slaughter represents one of the greatest and most terrible of history. Renowned for having withstood the hordes of Genghis Khan, they were no match for the French sharpshooters and cannoneers. In 2 hours, 2,000 Mamelukes were killed for 20 Frenchmen. Bonaparte's general staff then arrived at the pyramid. And here they are in perspective, arriving at that pyramid in picture form, upper picture. No, spread it wide, that's the one. Now they really start getting into this. They really start getting into this pyramid. They measure it outside, inside. They discover the marvelous triangulation, the perfection of it being a benchmark, the way it's laid out, oriented to the four cardinal points of the compass. It was the benchmark from which every piece of property could be in Egypt laid out, and the pyramid in its perfection suddenly begins to start looking like not necessarily a tomb but a metric monument designed to embody and perpetuate a system of measures. They finally give up on the theory that it's just built as a tomb, and they start thinking it's just a modern or a monument to measurements. That's part of it. Probably Napoleon did more to start, here's Napoleon's own notes of his studies of this pyramid that fascinated him so greatly. By the way, it fascinated Adolf Hitler with equal emphasis, and Alexander the Great with equal emphasis. And remember this, it is the demon that empowered Alexander the Great that will empower Antichrist. I'll give you one more thing. After the French were defeated at Waterloo, a Genoese Italian merchant, Caviglia, arrived in Egypt. He's tired. I got to quit or can I finish? I think I'll quit. You want a break? You want a restroom break? You have recess when you're at school. We sing a song, you know. Caviglia arrived in Egypt, master of Maltese bought vessel flying the British flag. Seized by the mystery of the Great Pyramid, he gave up the sea and settled down to exploring the pyramid. Caviglia cleared out the bat dung from Davison's chamber. Thank God that's gone. And set up housekeeping within it, turning the gloomy recess into a residential apartment. Though how this was accomplished under a 3-foot ceiling is not explained. Alexander William Crawford, later Lord Lindsay, who encountered Caviglia in Cairo, found the Italian to be a deeply religious man, well versed in the Bible, which he constantly quoted, and also a man with some pretty strange ideas about what he'd find in the pyramid. Now we're getting hot. Getting hot, getting warmer. To England, Crawford wrote, "Caviglia told me that he had pushed his studies in magic, animal magnetism, to an extent which nearly killed him, to the very verge," he said, "of what is forbidden man to know, when it was only the purity of his intentions which saved him." Caviglia was convinced that if he dug into the pyramid, he would eventually encounter a secret room. To find it, he hired a gang of Arab workmen to dig a tunnel leading off from Davison's chamber. No matter how far they dug, they found nothing but solid masonry. At last, Caviglia was obliged to give up the job. To console himself, he set about analyzing the mystery of the well. That one, you remember, that shaft? Lowering himself down the shaft, Caviglia, at least he didn't ask the Arabs to do it, Caviglia got as far as 125 feet below the grotto, only to find, as Davison had before him, that the bottom was completely stopped, and that the air was so scarce his candle sputtered, making it difficult for him to breathe. However, the bottom appeared to be mostly sand and loose rocks. Caviglia was determined to unplug it and see where it led. For a while, he managed to impress a gang of Arabs into raising basketfuls of the sand all the way up to the top of the well. But the shaft was so tight, the air so fetid with bat dung, and the dust so suffocating, that the Arabs began to faint and refused to work further. I got some preacher friends I'd like to take on a tour of that well. Caviglia attempted to clear the air at the bottom of the well by burning chunks of sulfur, but it was still impossible to breathe that far down for any length of time, and the Arabs would not resume their digging. Caviglia decided to attack the problem from a different angle. He would attempt to clear the main descending passage to the subterranean pit, which had been filled since Al-Mamun's time with the refuse of the plugs they had broken out of the ascending passage. Remember, they didn't go all the way down to that lower area, and they carved out around the plugs, and that filled with not plugs cut to size, but debris. Caviglia had the refuse carried up and out of the pyramid and was able to push his way on hands and knees down the passage for 150 feet. The heat was so great and the air so impure he started to spit up blood. You know where he's at, don't you? He's down there now underneath. Still, he would not give up. At the end of another 50 feet, he made a discovery which seemed to indicate he might be on the right track. On the west side of the passage, he found a low doorway leading into a hole.
This is the end of side 3.